chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return.
Well, don't they start Jack something out? She is AV. Angelica Lysenko on the board. Say that 100 times fast. Doing a good job. Up bright and early. S&P futures down 550. NASDAQ futures down 12 and a quarter. All kinds of news this morning. Dove Bears, Major League Baseball. Lou, how are you, buddy? Lou Michaels from, where are you from? Italy this morning, right? Lou, are you there? Don't seem to have him, maybe.
Lou, are you here?
Lou, are you here?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you. We good?
Okay.
All right. How are you?
Very good. I was horrified at the Chicago Bears.
Dub Bears. You ever seen two teams with the amazing lack of discipline of both teams with the personal fouls and the... What's with the taunting guy, a guy after you score a touchdown that costs you, your team then a touchdown? What is with these people, Lou?
I think you're seeing, and I've got a couple of thoughts on this, and this is something that I've talked about before on the program. I think the lack of practice that is mandated by the collective bargaining agreement that was signed in 2011, I think that lack of practice, hitting practice, has a definite effect on the quality of the game. I don't think you see really good football being played until, you know, four or five games into the season when guys get used to hitting each other again and seeing this stuff at full speed. And for some guys, they don't really catch up until the second half of the season. And I think that's part of what you're seeing. The other thing that I'm seeing is this incredible, and I don't know how to characterize it, grandstanding. These players who think that this is appropriate, every time they make a single good play on the field, that it's time to, you know, dance, show your stuff, whatever. It's not team-oriented, and I don't think it fits a professional. And I think it detracts from their focus on the game, and I think we see that.
It is what the NFL, the NBA, how can I put this in a way that's politically correct? Probably can't. They're always walk the line between, playing football and this street cred, you know, and they're absolutely convinced that one of the reasons why basketball, I think, is taking on is because of that. Every single, mostly African American, but the white guys too, every single, he doesn't like this guy, it's in this guy's face, he's tweeting, he doesn't like that dude, doesn't like this guy's girlfriend. This has become one of the reasons why, I think these people think, that's one of the reasons why the NBA, even though the games, you can't even watch them, most of them, in my opinion, the league is doing, considered to be doing exceptionally well in terms of sales of equipment. So they want to put some of the street cred back in the game somehow. So every single play, somebody's in somebody's face, chipping away.
Who does that appeal to? I mean, this is entertainment.
Lou, you're an old white guy like me. It does not appeal to you and me, but clearly we're out of the loop.
Well, I don't know who it appeals to. I mean, let me tell you something. It's not Angelica and Jess and their cohorts who are paying $200 a seat to go to these games. And maybe the in-person experience doesn't matter anymore. Maybe it's all what you can put on TV, but I find it tremendously distracting, and I find it does. I mean, if what you're thinking about is how you're going to practice when you get a sack, or how you're going to dance when you get a single sack in a game, you're not thinking about some other stuff. And I think it affects the quality of the game. It certainly, to my mind, affects the watchability of the game. I mean, these guys celebrating after every single play, and I'm just going, no, I don't think so.
Well, Lou, the guy in Oakland, the one guard, well, I think he was white, but he was so tatted up you couldn't really tell. Number 64. What do you have? Two holding penalties, at least one personal foul. And the announcers are like, man, when he comes off the field, he's going to have, what's his name, Gruden in his face. The guy went and sat down. Nobody said a word to him. And the guy in the Bears score a touchdown. The guy makes a really nice catch. The other receiver, not even him, runs over and starts chipping at the guy who was covering him. So they get a 15-yard penalty, and I would have thought that you would have put that on the extra point and make it like a 45-yard kick, but instead they took it on the kickoff, which ended up being genius, so I would have been wrong. And the guy ran it back to like the 50 or something. And that's when they went and scored back. I mean, how do you give up that 15 yards? I mean, there were a couple of awful calls, I thought. I mean, I don't see how that guy being blocked to the ground, you know, 10 feet in front of the punter, only to have the guy like kind of trip over him. The guy had no more thought of hitting that punter than a man in a moat. And yet they
I know.
I mean, I don't know where that call came from. The
well, I mean, they distinguish hitting the punter with running into the punter, and the kicker was running into the kicker.
He didn't run into the punter; he was laying on the ground.
Yeah. I know. I thought that was a terrible call as well. I just saw that on the replay.
Well, there was a game 2 weeks ago, lured a guy was a field goal, and the dude comes in from the side. He does just like you were probably taught or you were coached. You pick a spot in front of the kicker where you can't hit him.
Yeah.
And you jump up and you try and catch the ball in the air, and then you land away from the kicker by a way. Well, the kicker kept walking up like 2-3 steps and like trips over the guy. It was laying on the ground, and they called roughing the kicker on that.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't understand a lot of some of the other calls. I mean, I'm sorry, I understand you want to protect the quarterbacks, but there are way too many roughing the passer calls that I think are just incidental contact calls or unavoidable hit calls. And I have some real problems with consistency and how they're refereeing it.
Well,
the other thing I was going to comment on, since you mentioned the NBA, is the absolutely what I consider to be shameful response by the NBA to the Houston Rockets. I think it's the GM.
Yeah. Oh, I wanted to talk to you about that.
Comment about standing with Hong Kong. And the NBA forcing a retraction almost immediately about how we respect China.
Let me get this straight, just so I know. Everybody that I know of and that I think I like is for Hong Kong's demonstrations and not for China on this. I have to go on the air and say that I'm for China because they might throw an ad my way someday. I'm not going to do that.
Well, the NBA looks at China as its huge market, and so this is pure money. Somebody in the Chinese government called the NBA head office, and I mean, I'm sorry, Adam Silver has as much backbone as this jellyfish that I saw at the aquarium here the other day, and so they just rolled. They said, no, we don't mean to criticize China. We're not going to criticize China. And I mean, the Chinese are doing some pretty awful things right now, and not just in Hong Kong.
Right.
They've taken more than a million Uyghurs who are Muslims and are putting them in concentration camps. They are forcing harvesting of organs from executed prisoners and from God knows who else for their medical industry. They are engaged in active repression in Hong Kong, although they're terrified right now to go into and crush what's going on in Hong Kong because they are understanding what that means for money.
Lou, I'll give you an example.
I don't understand the NBA's actions, and then there's some backlash on that, and there should be a lot of it.
Lou, these people,
they need to get out in front of that. They need to get out in front of that. As far as I'm concerned, they need to get out in front of that right now and stand up and say, "Look, we're not going to get into the political comments of our management team on their time and their vehicle." And by the way, we like China and we're happy they like our product, but that doesn't mean we don't call a spade when we need to.
I don't.
It's just ridiculous.
When did this? I hear people not as much as they used to, but once a day you'll hear some, I won't say stupido, but somebody who doesn't think before they talk, in one man's opinion. Somebody will talk about, like, you and I, if we do business with each other, if we trade against each other, if we play golf together, even though either one of us play much, we have to be straight with people. But the minute you get to be a chairman of a company, your only responsibility is to the bottom line if you roll over babies to do it. I don't see where that mentality ever came from, Lou. I don't see why anybody would ever say that, that all of a sudden, when you reach a certain dollar number, your responsibility to have any sort of morals whatsoever somehow leaves and it's all dollars. Do people actually believe that when they say it, or do they just say it because somebody else said it?
I don't know. I think it goes case by case. But what I absolutely don't understand is why the NBA felt it was necessary to do this. If China says, look, we're not going to give you the kind of economic benefit that we were thinking about giving you, or we're going to deal with NBA here in China. I mean, my response to that is, so what?
Yeah.
You know, great. Go watch Chinese basketball if that's what you want to do. But we're the NBA, and we're responsible for our product, and you guys can deal with what you need to deal with. But we're not going to come down and say, oh yeah, China's okay. And by the way, I, since I'm on the air with this, I thought the president's congratulating Prime Minister Xi, or President Xi, on 70 years of communist Chinese dictatorship was manifestly inappropriate and improper. And I rebelled against that. I didn't understand it. I don't understand why he did it, except maybe in some goofy, way he thought that would improve the chances of getting the tariff situation resolved. And we all know the president doesn't think past the next deal, and maybe he thought that would help close the deal. But the NBA's conduct and the president's conduct, I thought, were inappropriate and wrong.
Your buddy,
that's my position for today.
Without hitting you up with one, of course I can never hit you up with one you don't know anything about. Two things I wanted to run by you.
No, you can't hit me up for something I won't talk about.
Well, that could be too. your buddy Fari was all fired up on Friday, actually, because we're going to be showing Thursday, about these new carrier busting missiles the Chinese have.
Supposedly, yeah.
He claims that he spotted them in his parade, and he's convinced it's all our technology. But what they do?
I think he's probably correct.
What he claims, though, Lou, is these things, they're ceramic, okay, and there's no warhead on them, according to him. What they do is they come out of orbit, and they're designed to hit from the above, essentially Mach 1.5. And just bust the thing up. I mean, it's sort of like
this is a variation on a weapon system that was initially debated back in the 80s when I worked at the Secretary of the Air Force's office. These were the so-called rods from God weapon system that involved orbiting tungsten steel rods that weighed, anywhere between half a ton to a ton each, with ablative surfaces on the nose that would be dropped from orbit, deorbited onto missile silos. The idea being that a one ton mass of steel arriving at about Mach 6 or 7, because that's what they would be coming in at with no brakes, striking the ground, and it was just a steel penetrator striking the ground anywhere within a half a mile of a missile silo would create an impact that would effectively destroy the silo and make it impossible to launch the missile. Would also create a hell of a fireball but without radiation, and it would also be done very quickly because it's coming in from orbit. So you might get you might get 5 minutes of warning if things started to come in. Guidance has always been an issue on these things. So the question is, you know, can you get one of these things to come out of orbit accurately enough to hit a moving target in the open ocean, and can you put a guidance package on it that will survive entry and give you that capability? The short answer is I don't know. The long answer is it's certainly within the realm of possibility. But again, the idea with much of the Chinese missile force is to not just create not just a short zone buffer around China on the ocean side, but to give them the ability to preempt across the Pacific and maybe across both oceans, across the Pacific to preempt our vessels coming in and force us to operate from land-based targets, land-based facilities that they can easily target.
Well, it's very similar, Lou, to the, I don't know how much you probably have done more than this than me, but the old battleships, the when they were built, the theory was that you were going to be fighting other naval vessels, right? So your armor was all, it was a huge armor belt, and you had massive armor on like your turrets and stuff on top of the thing. So the idea being, if some shell comes in at 30 degrees or 40 degrees, it's essentially going to hit the side of the thing, and you're going to have all this armor to protect you. You know, you could pretty much take a shot on the armor belt. What was the armor belt like 18 inches or something? Some huge number.
Yeah.
But when your bombs came in, the bombs hit the top. And the top was actually a wood deck. Now it was reinforced, but it was never designed to have the hit come from above. So if you actually would have designed a battleship with we really concerned yourself about air defenses, the deck would have looked a lot different. I mean, and the ship would have been much more survivable in an air attack.
That's true. But a kinetic round is a lot different than a high explosive round. So even 18 inches of armor with a kinetic round coming in of a couple of hundred pounds that is coming in at Mach 3 or Mach 4.
I'm not saying it would survive that. My point was is the way the thing was designed in such a way to protect from stuff that ended up, that's not what got them. It was, I think I read this special, or I saw this special on the History Channel, it's called Fire from the Sky. That's not the direction that when you built the first dreadnought, you would expect the shell to come from, directly above.
Correct. But again, that calculation is not really a factor.
No.
In these kinetic rounds. I mean, these kinetic rounds can come in from any direction. It's the same functional thing with an anti-tank round that is fired, from a tank shell. Well, tanks are designed with armor systems that are designed to defeat anti-armor shells that are high explosive, but form a mass that burns its way through the armor and into the tank. A kinetic round doesn't even react to the counter explosion of an anti-armor protective belt on a tank. A kinetic round comes straight in through whatever the explosion is or the disruption effect is on the tank, because it's got so much kinetic energy behind it. It just slices through, you know, everything and cuts into the tank and tears it apart. That's what these rods are designed to do. They're designed to cut through whatever is on top, and they will. I mean, they'll go straight through it at that speed. And then eventually they're slowed or stopped suddenly by some structure within the ship, which causes them to vaporize, and you get an explosive, a thermal explosive effect inside a confined space, which is, you know, trouble. So
I'd say that's trouble.
That's where this thing comes from. I mean, as I said, that was the idea of the rods from God, the steel penetrators that were coming in. When those things hit the ground at Mach 4, Mach 5, you effectively got all that kinetic energy converted instantly into heat, which vaporized the metal, which caused, you know, a thermal pulse that exploded outward. And you basically got the effect of a small atomic warhead, but with no radiation.
Other question I have regarding, I was speculating last week, not knowing anything, but I don't have to stay in the not knowing anything too much with our listeners, because all of a sudden I got all kinds of tweets and emails regarding the masks over in China. I had no idea that those guys, have you been over there lately? Evidently one of the listeners actually sent me an email saying that he was just there in his hotel had facial rec for his room.
Oh yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Have you been following the Hong Kong stuff?
Well, I know they were talking about the mask. I had no idea that they had facial rec all over the place.
Well, it's not just the masks. One of the first things that came out of the Hong Kong riots, if you saw these green laser beams, you know, laser pointers coming out of the crowd and aiming at the cameras on the light poles to disable them, to prevent them from getting facial recognition. And the same thing with the portable systems that the Chinese police were carrying. And you know, China operates on this something called a social credit system. I don't know if you're aware of this.
No.
But it basically is a constant updating background check on its citizens. And if you don't have enough social credit, in other words, if you've got too many parking tickets, or your bank account isn't properly maintained, or you've had a drunk driving arrest, or you've been identified as somebody who spends too much time on the internet, you get a social credit score, and if your social credit score isn't high enough, you can't get a passport. If your social credit score isn't high enough, you can't travel to certain areas, and you can't engage in certain business transactions. So it's 1984, but done in this kind of economic way that effectively, you know, precludes citizens from engaging in conduct that the Chinese government believes is unfriendly to it.
We're probably gonna have to go to break here pretty soon. We got a few minutes, but this is a long question. Why do you suppose?
These are the people the NBA is defending again.
I know. I'm just,
and the president tweeted congratulations to.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious when you start seeing, you know, this is, I guess it's probably politically incorrect, but you see the U.S., and I'm going to try and get to this maybe in our second half hour. I had a long conversation with our buddy Eric last night. All this stuff that's going on with this impeachment and all this other stuff, Lou, I mean, I'm willing to let this thing, you know, take its course, but we'll talk about that, you know, after the break. But somewhere along the line, are the people in this country ever going to, I'll use the term, wake up collectively and realize how special our system is and how many people have died for it and how nobody else, Europe, yes, but I mean, you don't get any, has there ever been a democratically elected, reasonable ruler in either Africa or South America, ever? Might have been maybe South America somewhere, but I mean, is there something so special about the Greek, Latin, European, whatever you want to call it, Renaissance type
Western thing. Liberal democracy.
To me it is so, if all of a sudden every single person in this country decides that our system basically sucks so bad that we can never, you can't investigate somebody, you can't do this, Lou, that's all we got. I mean,
let me direct your attention to an article, and Angelica can find it, I think. It's in Quillet, Quillette, or T-E, that is called the Perils of Oikophobia. Do you know what oikophobia is?
No.
Oikos means home in Greek. So it's a fear of your home, or a phobia of your home. And it refers to the vehement anti-Western feelings and sentiments that are being expressed by Westerners, and especially Western academicians, toward Western liberal democracy. How, you know, the United States and the Western liberal democracies are always the bad guys. That we somehow brought 9/11 on ourselves. That you know, free speech, the free speech that's practiced here in the United States is problematic and needs to be restrained. That capitalism is a terrible system compared to everybody else. This kind of thing, all the things that have made us a success are now being hated and trashed. And it's being done from within. I mean, we have a large number of people. The New York Times published an editorial last weekend on, you know, that basically attacked free speech.
I will.
We don't need free speech.
I would. First of all, we do need free speech. We also need to go to break. We come back. It's very interesting what you just said, Lou, because as you know, I'm on your side. But I maybe can know, we'll talk a little bit about why maybe some people feel that way. S&P futures down $7, NASDAQ futures down 18. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Hello, welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us. SP Futures down 6.25, and NASDAQ Futures down 16. We were down 12 last night, so we've come back roughly halfway. Last week, obviously, was a wild one as we were way down and came back almost to be unchanged, and we sold off a little bit on the close. So we're down a little bit on the week with all the crazy stuff from the Fed and labor numbers and everything else, and we'll talk about that when we get done with the China stuff. Dow Futures down 62. Individual stocks in the Dow, nothing of any kind of consequence moving. The biggest move is McDonald's down 50 cents. We only got Boeing's down 70 cents. So nothing crazy there. Although Apple, somehow or another, continues to go up in the midst of this thing with China. Lou, when you come back, the thought of the best trading stocks in the Dow with a problem with China would be Apple and Nike. I never would have fathomed, but somehow that's the way it is. Asia, Nikkei down 34.1%. Shanghai down 26.9%. Hang Seng down 289.1%. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 39.3%. FTSE up 22.3%. CAC around up 12, only 2%. Bonds, 1.54. That's up 0.2%. The Bund minus 0.58. Japan minus 0.22. So not much going on there. Oil, a little bit of move to the upside. 56 cents, 53.37. Brent, 46 cents, 58.83. Natural gas, 231, another 3 cents down. That's really something. RBOB, 157. The bleep in near me in the city is 375. And I'd say in the suburbs, the gas is up 40 cents since the episode in Saudi Arabia, maybe 30 cents, with the RBOB actually is down 7 cents. So how's that for one up the old address? Gold down 680, 1506. Silver down 12 cents, 1750. Hey, V, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, dear
listeners. I'll help you out with the sports, Dub Bears. Go ahead, traffic, weather.
Happy Monday, everybody. It is 6:36 in Chicago, 52 degrees currently. Clear and sunny Monday with the highest 68 and lowest 50. So beautiful day to start off the week. And for Phoenix, even sunnier with clear skies day. In 64 degrees right now, with the highest 99 and lowest 71. In traffic, we have one accident reported on 3 states southbound before Bentonville Bridge, so be aware of possible delays up to 5 minutes. Overall, current traffic situation looks pretty clear, which is usual image for this early hour. Let's see what's going to happen in an hour. I have a feeling like we will have more things to discuss on the traffic image.
Yes.
Definitely, yeah. And in sports, the final scores, Cardinals beat Bengals 26-23, and Bears lost to Raiders 21-24.
Oh, Bears. In baseball, we've got the Braves coming back on the Cardinals in the ninth inning last night. They lead that series 2-1. L.A. leads 2-1. They beat the Nationals 10-4, and we've got the Braves leading, the Cardinals 2-1. They're playing today. Houston is leading 2-0 on the Rays, and we've got Dodgers leading the Nationals today. So everybody could pretty much, everybody could get out of this today, which is bizarre. The Yankees beating up on the Twins. Lou, are the Twins ever going to win a playoff game? Was it like 14 in a row they've lost?
I continue to be amazed at how a team that good struggles once you get into the playoffs, and I don't understand it, it's a little bit like the situation with the Brewers. You know, they were the hottest team in baseball, and then they fell apart once they got into that single game playoff against the Nationals.
Yep. Well, I mean, baseball is the design of your team for 162 games, which is camaraderie in the clubhouse, coming back from injuries, depth in the. All that stuff kind of goes out in one game in baseball, one or two. You know, it's tough, but it's just different, Lou. It's, you know, what can you say? Where some of the other sports aren't necessarily that way, but hey, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about after the break here, but we talk a little bit about the we were the view of people of the U.S. and this mea culpa that you hear. Kathy Durbin used to do some of that. And you know what's interesting, Lou, is the more. Well, first of all, nobody who's ever been on the show knows more about what goes on overseas as you, except for maybe Fari, because he lived there. I'll just say, from what I understand from people, and not necessarily you, because I would like you to comment on it, is that the way the U.S. operates overseas is sort of different than the kind of the warm and fuzzy view we get here. That in a lot of people's estimation, the U.S. power is nothing but a projection of their big companies. That the CIA works way too closely with somebody's companies in somebody's places. You know, what exactly are all these CIA guys doing in Ukraine? I mean, I don't know. Are they totally out of the, I mean, it seems to me, Lou, and this is, you can predict economically, that
when you say all these CIA guys, are you referring to Hunter Biden?
No. What I'm saying is, No, the people I was referring to is, a guy who was a former priest, if ever be a former priest, was teaching economics in South Korea, and he got to the labor union chapter, and a CIA guy showed up and said, "You want to skip this chapter?" I mean, I don't know what the role of all these people are. I know that when we ship, pick a number, $200 million, $400 million, $500 million to, say, wherever the hell it's going to, Guatemala, Ukraine, you know, Saudi Arabia, God knows what. That's an awful lot of money to be shipping, Lou. And the care and feeding of where that stuff goes to, and I'll use the term handlers along the way. One thing that the Trump situation has given us is an amazing view. I had a little splinter of that when I was basically farting around with those bonds that I never could sell one of them because they were unsaleable. But I did that just as a curiosity. These are these bearer bonds that these countries gave out years and years ago and never paid off on them. But there were people, Lou, that I talked to from Vancouver and all these other places that were chasing this money from place to place and knew every dime that Bill Gates was given someplace. Because if you didn't have boots on the ground, people stole this dough and trying to get the people. The chase and the handling of this, a lot of it's charity money overseas. I mean, why are Manafort, why are Flynn, why are Joe Biden kid? Why are all these people basically screwing around over in Saudi? There too, in the Ukraine, and why are CIA people sort of involved with a government that was so totally screwed up that guy got tossed out here in the midst of all this mess with Russia? The guy's got a palace that rivals Louis XIV, for God's sake. I mean, this is the international carnage following this money, and the view of America that it must be causing in a lot of places. I guess I sympathize with it. Lord, doesn't mean I want to throw us out or get rid of our judicial system, but it means, I mean, what are we doing? That's the question. What are we doing?
Part of the problem is that I think we're getting a swing of the pendulum back from the sort of imperialist worldview that developed in the early part of the 20th century. So after World War II, you start seeing a pushback on American exceptionalism, and it starts at the universities, and it's continued and actually been exacerbated at the universities, I think, to the extent now that the idea that America is exceptional is greatly the exception at most liberal arts programs. But it's part of it's a pushback to that. I mean, part of it is the idea that we need to be more balanced in the way we do things. But, you know, the focus, for example, on tearing down Confederate statues, I'm sort of a mixed mind of that. I consider the Civil War to be an act of treason. And so the idea that you would put up statues of people who engaged in that conduct is problematic, and yet it is part of our history. We need to understand how it happened. We need to understand why we engaged in slavery, but we don't need to continually beat up the country over the fact that we had slavery in this country when almost every country did, and a number of countries now still do. And so, you know, let's get, I think the balance presentation has gone. This article that I referenced in Colette, which I think is pretty good, notes that this oikophobia arises when your Western liberal democracy is so successful that you really can't look to distinguish yourself from other people except by attacking your own. And so the idea that I think the idea started maybe in the 50s that really, you know, the way to go was with European cooking or European fashion or European whatever, and not looking at the United States for those kinds of things. And from there, you develop this kind of what I consider European sensibility that, yeah, really the Europeans are the ones that really understand how things are going. Something that I find laughable.
I do too.
We've protected Europe for 60 years.
Yeah.
Without us, they'd be either speaking German or Russian. I'll call it anti-American because I think it is, this anti-American sentiment that seems to have developed and is fostered within our own borders, I think comes out of that initial push, and then out of a fact, I think that we characterized ourselves in the Second World War as this wonderful place, and the place everybody wanted to come to after the war, the place that's opened itself up to immigrants. And the truth is more complicated than that.
Sure it is.
But that doesn't mean that we're bad because our truth is complicated. We have as much of a discussion of our faults in this country as anybody.
Lou,
We lay it out there for discussion. But I think we need, you know, there's no balanced sort of long-term perspective about the fact that human progress in human rights and civilization and everything else has been advanced very significantly by what's going on in the United States.
Without a doubt.
And we've been the protector of other people who've had those gains. And I think we've lost track of that somehow.
I'm always accused of being this whatever, but Lou, I'm right with you. I read more than the average bear, but I understand, not without being there myself. Obviously the trials and tribulations of people from the South. I mean, I'm not as up on the slavery part as I am the sharecropper part, which was damn near as bad. One you were allegedly free and one you weren't. I mean, I don't know where the sharecroppers could ever have gone, it's hard to split hairs and decide who had a better deal, sharecroppers or the Asian people that were blowing up tunnels with gunpowder on the Western Railroad, and if there was an avalanche, you didn't even go look for them till spring. I don't know that the Irish guys that dug the I&M Canal, the only thing that made them through the day was a pint in their pocket. I'm not so sure any of those people had it so hot, and I think the people that moved west didn't have it so hot. You see the people in the Dust Bowl that went out and. I'm not comparing, saying free people versus slave. But I'm saying in terms of your day-to-day life, it pretty much sucked for all these people. I mean, it's about as bad as it can get, right? You always talk about the coal miners. Could it have gotten any worse? I mean, honestly, as Roosevelt sent people out to find out what was wrong, well, actually he didn't. Hopkins sent Eleanor Roosevelt's friend around the country. It was a toss-up who had it the worst, the sharecroppers or the coal miners. I mean, basically, they had nothing to eat. I mean, it was the black lung. God knows what else you had. I mean, we've had, but I was at the, up at the Buckingham waiting for your buddy Greg a few weeks ago, and there's these younger people talking at the bar, and they're talking about, the slavery this and reparations and everything, and how we, what you're talking about. And they said, well, what's your opinion? You're like older. I go, well, I look at this black guy, and I said, you know what? 25 years ago, you wouldn't be here. I mean, what happened to people was horrible. But it is our history, and guess what? Now you're here, you're welcome. Why wouldn't you be? You should have been all the way. The Irish people should have been all the way. They weren't. The fact is, now we're here, and we're making some progress. And let's accentuate the progress instead of killing ourselves about stuff that we weren't even alive would happen. I mean, we don't want to rewrite Huck Finn because we have to understand that's the way people talked. That's the way it was. I mean, if you don't know your history, you don't know anything, Lou. And am I wrong or right on this stuff?
No, I mean, I think that is the issue, but we have gotten into this self-loathing, or say we. A significant portion of the population has gotten into this self-loathing mode that, you know, somehow we're the worst of everybody. And I think it's off the rails in a number of places. I will also point to the rise of what I call, in this country especially, the global elite that really owes no allegiance to any nationality except themselves and their fellow jet setters.
Well, when you say
who have access to international travel and international business and international finance, and as far as they're concerned, you know, country borders are problematic.
Lou, you know what I'm going to buy you for Christmas?
Go ahead.
I'm going to buy you, I got to buy about five of these because I owe one to Eric. I'm going to buy the Sovereign State of ITT. Your buddy,
yeah.
Janine, felt that way, what was that, 50 years ago? What are we doing? What am I doing messing around with all these puppet governments when I should just be able to, the people that are worth something in the world are these big corporations. And you don't think they're playing, I mean, obviously, you don't think Apple or Nike is playing China against us or the stock wouldn't be here, Lou? I don't know how they're doing it. I just, somehow or another, there's stuff going on here and I don't, the prescription drug companies the same way. They're playing, you know, one government against another. I mean, I think our issue going forward is there going to be a government that's as strong as the corporations? And we're not going to do it if all the government does is fight. I got an email from an elderly lady, and not elderly, from Ohio, who somehow, when she was in Chicago, we were on the air, she still listens from time to time. And I get an email from her. She goes, "Chief, I think you're spot on. This is nothing but a brush fire to get all the people in this country arguing with each other so 100 people can steal a place."
I'm not quite that conspiratorial, but I absolutely believe that there is a significant group of people at the top economic levels in this country who feel no allegiance to the United States whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely.
Except, and I'm sorry to say that I know a couple of these people very, very closely. And when I have dinner with them, I hear, you know, oh, Europe does this better, Europe does that better, this is better in Japan, and, you know, this particular person lives in Singapore, and she's constantly running down U.S. this, U.S. that. And I finally, you know, I finally, that she's married, you know, she's married to somebody who is not a U.S. citizen, so they're citizens of the world. And I said, you know, this is all very interesting. Have you given up your U.S. passport? And she said no. And I said, so when the, you know, the excrement hits the fan, when all this goes down, when the shooting starts and the guys with guns who really don't care what your bank account is start coming for you in your overseas penthouse, you'll be able to come back to the United States, because notwithstanding the fact that we're crude, rude, and socially unacceptable, we fight like hell. And we'll protect you. And we'll protect you regardless of the fact that you've been bad-mouthing the country for the last 25 years.
I will say, the only thing I will say about one of my friends, I think you might have met him, but he's been on the show a couple times. He lives in Singapore now. We first went over there, and I've told the story before. He goes, "I can't believe that before my tapes get in," he and his wife were not, like, you know, watching naughty tapes or anything. Somebody had to watch all his tapes. This is before there were CDs, right? Or a VCR. His VCR tapes. Somebody had to watch him before they gave them to him, make sure there was no government sedition or, I guess, nudity in any of them. But he says, you know, on a day-to-day basis, because of the crime, he goes, "I'm much freer in Singapore than I am in the U.S. He said, "My kids can take a cab at age 9 or get on a bus, and nobody worries about them. I never lock the car, or I never lock the house." He goes, so in terms of what some of our cities, what we've become crime-wise, Lou, I mean, we need to deal with that, because there's a lot of people in this country that don't feel free at all. And I don't know how we do that, but somehow or another, you can't have people. I mean, some of my African-American friends that still live in Inglewood that work downtown at various jobs here, they'll tell me every day, "Got to out heard shots again last night." I mean, Lou, we got to fix that. We can't have our people living like that. You know, I mean,
the political leadership in Chicago is not interested in fixing that problem, Chief.
It appears not. It appears not.
They pay lip service to it, but they're not, because they don't take the steps necessary to do it. And you and I have had this conversation before about the idea that we're not going to get our arms around the gun situation in Chicago, because there's so many out there that are illegal and unregistered. But we can get our arms around the shooter situation. We can start putting those people in jail, and we can put them in jail for longer and longer terms, so we take them off the streets. We can't control the guns, but we can control the shooters.
How is it, Luda, we went from...
There is a complete lack of political will to do that.
How is it that we went from no cameras to more cameras than any other city in the world except London? And London's, what, 5 times as big or 4 times as big? And yet, 85% of the people still go unarrested. We haven't made any progress whatsoever.
Well, but again, part of the problem with that is we do arrest people and then we let them go. The courts let them go. There was an initiative by Rahm Emanuel to add a 5-year kicker to the sentence of anybody who was using a gun in a crime, an illegal gun in a crime. And as I understand it, the African American members of the city council came to him and said, if you do that, if you push this, we're not going to support you or anybody else here, because it's just going to mean more young black men in jail.
You know, we're not
going to support that.
Well, you led me into a little bit of what I want to discuss with you. I was talking about with Eric last night, because it's the same thing, I think, in some ways. I'm going to make the connection to a lot of the stuff I'm getting about the impeachment stuff. And I'm, you know, I don't want to get into the detail of that. I'm willing to let it play out. But Eric was telling me last night, finally I stopped him. I said, Eric, you sound like an old white guy, and you're an old black guy. You sound like me. I said to him, I go, if you were on the playground and a teacher called home and said your son was winging snowballs at people, and you came home and I said, Eric, what do you tell your mom? There were 3 other people. You know, she'd say, I don't care about those people. What were you doing? Were you throwing snow? I mean, it's something has changed, Lou, in this society. Maybe it was always there, but maybe in the Catholic areas it wasn't. I'm not saying, or whatever little group we were in. People think now that if you can point out to somebody that somebody else did sort of the same thing you did, it's now not a lack of law enforcement that somehow they let somebody go when you know, the guy who went by going 85 miles an hour and you were the guy who got caught. That equals a get out of jail free card for you. I mean, some of the stuff you see on that I get from the right, because obviously that's where they honestly think that if Hillary's guilty of something, which I'm sure she is, that somehow that's a get out of jail free card for Trump. And I don't get that at all. Maybe it means, I mean, you know, Hillary's got a fork in her, but I don't. I mean, literally on Thursday, I said, you know what? I found somebody tweeted me and said George McGovern and Hubert Humphrey were both seen in a library before the internet, looking in the classifieds for second store burglars. Now, does that mean Nixon was now innocent because somebody somewhere thinks that McGovern was doing the same thing? I mean, Lou, we got to get out of that mentality. Someday, somewhere, if a new sheriff comes to town, but I keep thinking the expressways here in Chicago, everybody's going 100 miles an hour. There isn't a cop anywhere. It's absolute mayhem. Well, if all of a sudden there's a new mayor or a new somebody and said, we're actually going to put some police out there. And my advice to you starting Monday is to obey the rules. Now, somebody on Monday morning at 12:01 gets pulled over for 90 miles an hour. First thing he's going to say is, what the hell? Everybody else is going 90. I mean, but somewhere people have to realize that that might be interesting, and if you're black or you're old or you're Irish or you're gray-haired, and the cop waited to pull you over. Now, that's another story. We both agree that shouldn't happen. But if you just happen to be the first guy that hits the radar, people now think, wait a minute, whoa, I could name you 3 guys yesterday that were going 90, and I'm only doing 89, and you got to let me go. No, one has nothing to do with the other, Lou. But this generation seems to think that it does. Or am I wrong?
Well, part of it is this. Part of it is, you know, and there's a significant distinction between the idea of using that as an excuse to engage in behavior versus the idea of saying, if you're condemning this, you know, not necessarily some breach of some law, but if you're condemning this behavior, but you didn't condemn the behavior when your guy was doing it, then I don't have to listen to you. And there's a big difference between those two.
I would agree.
You know, the fact that, for example, you know, people would get all excited about Trump's kids doing stuff when Biden and Pelosi's kids were doing the same thing. Okay, that doesn't excuse the fact that Trump's kids are getting the benefit of some of these breaks. It doesn't excuse that improper conduct. But what it does do is it makes me ignore the fact that people ignored Biden and Pelosi's kids doing the same thing. Means that I don't listen to their opinion and I don't take it seriously. It's called impeachment, and it's a standard legal device. But it doesn't excuse the conduct.
Lou, we only got 20 seconds, but the difference there. How does it happen that two people, one from the left and one from the right, that somehow are non-impeachable, that seem to be truthful people, stand up and say, when this is all over, we're gonna follow our money to two or three countries, and we're going to find out where exactly it all went and who was involved. And I'll tell you what, if there's Americans chasing down and making sure it's going the wrong places, you're all going to... That's what needs... That is the message coming out of this to me. To me, Biden's kid, Manafort, Flynn, they're all the same.
I absolutely agree with you. And that is the issue. that's quite frankly, I think what President Trump is pursuing here. I think he said, fine, you want to go after my phone call? Here's what we were concerned about. Here's what we were investigating. Here's what was really going on out there. And let the chips fall where they may. The election decide.
All right, Lou, thank you very much for calling in on Monday. Hopefully we'll still see you on Thursday, if you can.
Yeah, I'll be available Thursday. We'll talk to you then.
All right, SP Futures down 775, NASDAQ Futures down 23. Come back, we have a new guest, Mr. Jan Flanagan. I'll introduce him when we get back. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi. This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Something
happened. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. Angelica Vasenko. I only saw that twice an hour. She's AV. SP Futures down 775. NASDAQ Futures down 2225. New guest on the show. New contributor, Mr. Jan Flanagan. I won't say he's as old as me. He must be younger. Nobody's as old as me. Attorney, title attorney, educator, all around pretty good guy. Lover of classical music. Graduate of Notre Dame, doesn't really like football that much, but other than that, okay. John, how are you, bud?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
Hanging in there. Boy, we're talking about some kind of heavy stuff this morning here with Lou, like we always do. It does seem like we're ahead of ourselves in all kinds of different directions, aren't we? You know, why after all this time, we don't know if we're on foot or horseback in all these areas?
I know. Well, what Lou was just saying before the at the top of the hour about... finally doing a house cleaning where everybody sort of has to play by a certain set of rules, and that's just completely off the map now. You've got the mechanisms of impeachment trying to deprive a sitting president of an opportunity to run again, and from what I know about impeachment's history, that has never happened before. So that's got everybody really stirred up, and Trump will fight this as strong as he can because there's a lot on the line for him. And these people don't come to the table with clean hands at all. I mean, the Biden stuff is going to really hurt Biden probably more than Trump in the long run. And maybe that's what Elizabeth Warren and a bunch of other Democrats are hoping for, that this may play out in ways that are helpful to them before this is through.
Well, I mean, I think you have the idea that there's that there's so much fault around you can't do anything. I don't know that I buy that as a society. it does appear that's where we are. I'm sure not going to argue that with you, but somehow you got to come out of that. I mean, how you do, I don't know. But, the idea that everybody's so guilty we can't accuse anybody is not exactly a good spot either.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know, kind of, but you see it. It's funny, Jan. I had a long talk with Eric last night. I should have grabbed you and met us at the Tripoli, but I think it doesn't just land in Washington. It's people not seeming to know what the morals are anywhere. I mean, I gave a guy a ride the other night, and I was parked at this one place for a half hour waiting for him, and every time the light turned red, somebody blew it.
Right.
I mean, it's not just. And if you see somebody is delayed by traffic for a second, they feel that they get to go through the next red light because they get to catch up.
Right.
I don't know where we somehow lost this, whatever, maybe we never even had it. Maybe just, you and I had it, or a little enclave on the south side in Notre Dame, maybe nobody else ever had it. But it seems like there's a logic missing here. There's a moral relativism. There's something going on here that is clearly different to me. And you notice it in sports. You notice it in the state doing all these things to try and get, medical marijuana.
Right.
Or now recreational marijuana. Without any sort of definition, Jan, of where this goes without, matter of fact, the guy who lives downstairs from me, he's a Republican, works for one of the, I don't know who it is, but one of the top senators, and he's like his right-hand man, his bright kid. And I, well, kid, he's 30 years old, or 32, and I go, what's going on? He goes, this is the worst bill I've ever seen. He goes, it just got jammed through. These guys are convinced they're going to make money on the taxes, and that they're going to make money on the application process, and that the right guys are going to get these things, and everybody knows those guys are going to make a fortune. But, Jan, I mean, it's not like I have any kind of an issue with, you know, somebody doing a doob instead of having a beer. I mean, I never did, but, I mean, where is the overall cost to society? Did we send four or five people that were not tainted by either the industry or whatever to Colorado, to Washington, and say, okay, at the end of the day, has this been a positive or a negative? I mean, you got, you know, you've made money on the taxes, but by the way, how many people have you had in emergency rooms? How many people have you had here and there? Do we even know if it's a, or do we even care?
I don't think they know or care. And it's something akin to what, you know, I heard in your program last week about you're saying that the enemy isn't really capitalism, but the enemy is anti-competitiveness.
Right. I would agree with that.
You know, from what my nephew tells me in California, where he lives, that, you know, the two-tiered system there of the black market that always functioned when it came to pot versus, you know, state vendors. The state vendors are too expensive. This, you know, the taxes and everything just add on to the price. He still avails himself of the black market. He's a veteran. You know, he's entitled to it. But this hasn't worked the way all these people have promised it to work or expected it to work. And I can see what's going to happen here is that the delivery system for, recreational marijuana is going to end up in the hands of maybe one or two outfits that are going to gouge everybody to hell for it.
Yeah.
And the black market is not going to go away. The black market will probably flourish, maybe even, you know, get bigger, depending on what happens. And this is a boondoggle where the tax revenue doesn't flow in as we've been promised, and you still have the lack of control that a black market encourages. Who really has benefited here? And why should we allow, you know, the legislature to sign on to anything that is going to just make possibly a rough situation much worse?
Well, the medical stuff, I know people in that area, and I don't know that they, let's put it this way, I suspect, you know, that you don't actually get a prescription. I don't know if you know how this works. You probably do. You know all this stuff. You don't actually get a prescription. You get a card.
Right.
So it's not like, if you get a blood pressure prescription, you walk in and they go, okay, there's 30 days in the month, here's 30 pills, right?
Right.
It's, I mean, there's a certain logic to it, correct? I mean,
You know, and there's a rationing of it, and yeah, there's, you know, the potential for abuse, and it's monitored, and there's records of it, and everything else. So, as with prescription drugs,
well, I would have guessed, John, that it would have been the same way. I mean, if you're talking about if your kid has epilepsy, okay, and you got to give them four drops a day. Let's say I'm going to go in and they're going to give me 120 drops. You know, whatever. 4 times 30 is 120, right? I mean, or am I wrong? It's not the way it works. You can get whatever you want once a week.
Right.
And you don't have to get, matter of fact, they're expensive. So you can come in and get, you know, if you work by the week, you can come in and buy a week's supply or a few days' supply or something, as long as you have the card. So a lot of that, let's say, makes it into the, I'll use the term, market, because
right,
people can buy whatever they want,
right,
whether they use it or don't. So
and the different gradations of it, the strength,
right,
you know,
right,
the attractiveness, the smell, whatever, all that is, you know, up to you. So that's, you know, that you got a lot of freedom there.
But I mean, I'm gonna ask a question. I'm not, well, putting you out there as an expert, but you do read books without pictures once in a while. What if there's a distributorship across the street from Wrigley Field? Can 40,000 people get brownies and walk into the park and have 3 beers and 4 brownies and not even be able to stagger out of the place? I mean, is there any sort of, you go through a metal detector? Is there going to be a hooch brownie detector? I mean, what are we doing with this? I mean, do we have any idea of where this can go and where it can't? Or, I mean, I don't think we do we?
No, and I think In Chicago, where there's relatively, and I use that term guardedly, but relatively strong zoning, that this will be a battle that will play out, you know, till long after you and I are out of the picture, about where you can have these things, how many of them you can have, whether you have it across the street from Wrigley Field or a church or a school or anything else. This is a battle that hasn't really, you know, been engaged yet. And it will, I think, be attacked on the local level, maybe the very local level in precincts, and you'll have dry precincts just like you had with dry precincts and still do with booze. And there will be wards that, you know, it's less attractive, and this is already being sort of played out in, you know, Lightfoot's plan about where these dispensaries cannot go, and where, you know, Brendan Riley thinks they're okay, you know, or this is something that, you know, the city council hasn't ever really had to think about, at least to think aloud in public about, and how that works, you know, I can't say. I just think it's a much bigger problem and a much thornier, you know, battle that we're facing here than anybody has really thought about. And the worst thing is that, you know, whoever has control over the thing at the top, it's not going to be competitive. It's not going to be fair to the consumer. It's not going to be cheap. It's going to be expensive, and it's going to be highly regulated, and it's going to be, you know, doled out to people as favors in certain areas, to certain people, certain middlemen or whatever else. And I just get weary thinking about that, because that doesn't really
fulfill
any of the promises that we've been given here.
Can you name one?
Work.
Can you name one thing in our lifetime, roughly the same amount of time, that has ever come back? I mean, look at casinos where, let's put them on boats because if it doesn't work out, we can just get rid of the boats easy and we don't screw anybody in. How did that work out? I mean, you can just see right now Aurora or Naperville doesn't want a marijuana place. I'm going to say 10 years from now, God willing, you and I are still doing the show, we're going to see somebody saying, some bleep is going to run for mayor of Napertucky, and he's going to say, all we've done, our people are still getting the stuff everywhere, and by the way, we've lost $5 million worth of revenue, and we've got this new bridge we got to fix, and I'd have the money to pay for the bridge right now if we weren't this stupid, because we need that money. That money belongs to us. It's like not having video poker in a saloon. You know, I mean, what do you mean? You try it for a couple of years, we don't want it in our saloons or restaurants, and all of a sudden somebody comes up and says, can we really afford not to do it because our money is going to the next town over? I mean, we're having a casino downtown because of these fictional people that leave downtown and get blue smoke out of their behind on the way to Hammond, which I don't think there's probably five of them a week, and yet it's all you hear about. Our money's going to Hammond. The guy who ran for mayor, the former police chief, said, what do you say, hundreds of millions of dollars are going to Hammond from the U.S. or the Chicago downtown. And I'm saying, you ever been to Hammond? Hundreds of millions of dollars. Where's that going? you're going to tell me that these people are making hundreds of millions of dollars off our guys?
You skipped over Hammond and went to the hinterland, maybe.
They went somewhere. I mean, does anybody, I mean, there's people who are talking, I had a discussion, John, a couple of weeks ago with some people who are saying, you got to have these casinos because we need the revenue. And I say, okay, what's the revenue? What do you mean, what's the revenue? I said, what's the revenue? I mean, are you going to, on a sports bet, you're talking about there's a 10% VIG. Are you going to make it 40? Are you just going to charge the people so much for the square footage that nobody wants to open the place? I mean, what are you going to do? I said, how does a casino even get taxed? Well, I have no idea. I just know there's a lot of revenue. So you don't even know how they're taxed, and yet you're pushing it because you're going to get all this revenue. Where is it coming from?
Right.
Is it on the gambling? I don't think how can you tax the gambling? You're gonna charge somebody a dollar a hand for blackjack? I mean,
this whole, you know, holding this thing out as some kind of a solution to the, you know, the revenue problems of the state, it amuses me because it isn't like there is an infinite appetite for gambling or casinos, and it's viewed as if it's a kind of growth industry that if you put in a casino, that people who never gambled before are all of a sudden going to flock to it, and the returns will just be astronomical, and we need more of these places. And I think, you know, it's pretty much, I would say, a fixed market of consumers, and the more casinos you have, the less money they're all going to make, and there's only so much of this appetite. And however you cut the numbers, it's not enough to balance the budget of the state. It's not enough to turn us around or get us up from dead last, you know, in our financial picture. So I think it's la-la land. It's completely nuts. And, you know, I'm not a gambler myself, so I've just never understood it, but I'm unlikely to become one if there's a casino, you know, half a mile from
here. Well, I actually love to gamble. I mean, I obviously, since I trade all day, I used to go to Vegas all the time, but my parents loved to go to the track. My aunt and uncle lived at the track, for God's sake. My uncle worked second shift at Western Electric. My aunt worked first shift as a bookkeeper. Well, she worked the regular day as a bookkeeper. And on Saturday, they would double dip. They would go to Arlington or Washington for the flats, and then they'd go wherever the harnesses were at night. And on Sunday, they'd kind of sit around and get drunk together, and God knows what else they did. And that was until that when they both retired. Boy, oh boy, talk about a problem living together for a while. Anyway, so I mean, I used to go to the track with my mom and dad, and I mean, I used to pick up the tickets when I was like five. I'd been running around looking for anybody who tossed away a winner, and once in a while I found one. But you know, I could tell you chapter and verse on what pari-mutuel betting is, how much this did. But I mean, when you and I were 21, if you wanted to get a bet down, you stop by the barbershop and you say, anybody going to the track? Because you already got sometimes put out the turf edition at 11 o'clock. If there was a guy you wanted to get a bet down, you went to the barbershop and said, anybody going to the track, right? I mean, so, right. And then they went to off-track betting. And then they said, okay, then those guys become, they're politically out, even though they had money. So now you can't have slot machines at a track. Well, why not? Well, we got new guys. We got casinos. Right, so you got casinos. But now I was stunned, Jan. You know how dumb I am. I was stunned that I just assumed that the video poker and stuff in a restaurant was somehow tied into the casino in that area. Turns out it's not. The state's the casino.
Right.
So now you're
and I found that out much later, you know, after I knew, you know, video poker was a reality. And I didn't understand that either.
Well, so there
could, much, much later.
So how do you feel if your hair is Joliet, and now you got five of these machines in every restaurant within 40 miles of the place?
Right.
And I can tell you one place we go, I won't mention the name. Audrey and I go to this Mexican place in Homer Glen once in a while. And I'm going to say there's one or two waitresses every day, Jan, that make their $100 and drop 50 on these things out the door looking to make a killing every day. Now, for you and I to decide we're going to put, you know, $1,000 in our pocket or 2,000, or you're a big hitter, you might be 20,000. For us to get on a plane and go to Vegas and try and win for 2-3 days and come home, and whether we win or we lose, you know, I guess it doesn't matter much. For us, it's enjoyment of gambling. Okay, we like going there, we like the people, we like BSing with the people at the blackjack table. You know, it's a people show, blah, blah, blah. Maybe there's a show in the background, we can hear some people play music. We're going to have a nice time, okay? And whether we win or whether we lose is kind of our business.
Sure.
But for a state, you don't look out there and say your population's going to win. You know,
right,
exactly, they're going to lose. I mean, so it's a tax. So it's just another way to get money out of somebody's pocket. And you know, I tell a story all the time about the African American guy when I used to live at 70 West Huron. Every Saturday, I'd go down and take Gloria up my mom out to breakfast, and I'd go downstairs, get my coffee, and there'd be the guy walking in. Made $20 on the street, big thing of Coke, two things of Dorito, and 16 lottery tickets, and I'm going, this guy pays a higher marginal tax rate than anybody in the country. I don't even know it.
And the whole collateral effect of it, I mean, there's the Northwest Side where I live now, a guy around the corner from me was bragging about this years ago when it happened, but I was kind of, you know, put out by it. But he had been out to Joliet to the boat, you know, and made a killing and came home with, you know, a wad of bills in his pocket, really drunk, but he was followed all the way home by a guy who he thinks he had seen out there, and he got held up and lost it all around the corner from me as he was going into his house that night. So, you know, the people who are living high like that publicly are, you know, it has a whole effect of encouraging people to, you know, hit them up, knock them down, take them. The whole crime element associated with people who are unable to kind of control their wealth or make it or keep it sensibly. This is not the culture you want to encourage. It just increases the likelihood that you get people being hurt.
Now, was that hold up man a casino employee?
Well, that I never found out. It would make sense. But,
we had a guest on the show a long, long time ago, Jan, and he was a guy who he wrote a book about how crooked the lottery is. Now, once in a while, if the lotto gets over $8 million, we'll put a few bucks in from the office, because obviously they're going to pay out more than it's paid in that week, right? But anyway, so it's, you feel like if you do win, you're going to get more than you should, but of course you're not going to win anyway. But anyway, we had to do with these instant games, of which there's, you know, 100 of them. Well, of course, there's people play these things every day, and there's not one person at that line that could tell you what the odds are. But what this dude was saying, now the lotto at least is it's somewhat of a pari-mutuel system where everybody puts their money in, and if there's a winner, basically they pay out 45% or something, or 55. I mean, it's a horrible number. I mean, the tracks pay out 85, and these guys pay out like 50 or 45 or something. Well, on the instant games, the guy was saying that say there's 100,000 tickets or 50,000 tickets, and there's, you know, 5 winners. Well, if the 5 winners come out in the first 10,000 tickets, they still leave the other 40 sitting there, knowing there's not another winner left. Or if 40,000 come out and there aren't any big winners, they go and retrieve the spools. So there never is a winner.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but it's okay because it's for taxation. It's for schools, right?
Yeah, remember when it was instituted, you know, the next year the school budget was going to be balanced.
Well, John, I want to
still waiting 45 years later, but
I want to wander a little bit into the. I know you follow the markets a little bit, not a real lot, not like I do, but last week with the Fed, you know, being beaten up in the labor number on Friday, which we're going to talk about with David in a little bit, there seems to be this amazing, I'll use the term bifurcation. How's that for a term at this hour in the morning?
Hey.
Between people's views of where the economy is and where the stock market is. And but this has been like this now for a real long time, so it's not like I disagree with them, because it is happening. But the idea that we're starting to see a slowdown, I think a lot of it's being made worse by the tariffs. I think it was happening anyway. You still have all kinds of debt issues. You have all the problems that we had in my mind in 2009, and they're just, you know, they're still there in a lot of places. People aren't making enough. The increases in salary are not, you know, keeping up with inflation, not keeping up with education, not keeping up. I think all those problems are still there. But the idea that, like, last Friday, you know, I was watching Fast Money and all these other shows, yes, the economy is slowing down, but if the Fed is accommodative and keeps pouring money into the system, we can save asset prices, meaning stock market, buildings, companies, baseball teams, you know, baseball cards. And this has happened for a while, Jen. I'm of the group, I'll lead in first. I'm of the group that ship is getting close to a shoal. I don't know that they could be two separate animals for much longer, stock market and the economy. And what's your feeling there for somebody who doesn't do it all day long?
I think, you know, like you were saying at the beginning of the program today, you know, we're pretty much back where we were with all these fluctuations in the last week. I have never professed to be able to read how these things coalesce into a trend of any kind, or where they start to point the economy in a particular direction. But my fear is that, you know, when you've got a political climate like we have now and an international climate that is very delicately tuned, to say the least, with China and, you know, the trade war and everything else, I worry about manipulations, you know, from whatever sector of the stock market that are going to panic people now in ways they wouldn't in other times. And I worry in an election cycle, for example, that, you know, Trump has railed about the Fed and Powell, and that, you know, he sees them as his opposition, you know, political opposition. And of course the Fed has the power to be that, because they're, you know, they're not a government agency. They can do pretty much what, you know, they want to do. And I worry that the impact of that kind of collision course, where you get politics and the market opposed, or unintentionally opposed, perhaps.
Well, I mean, right now,
Janet, it brings the whole damn house down.
We only got 30 seconds, I guess. A quick question is it the Fed's obligation to continue to pour money in to keep the market up for the election? I mean, right now, he's asking them, I believe, we have a full minute. I'm sorry. He's asking them to continue to prop stuff up, I think, which is different.
And of course, the flip side of that is, do they have the desire, perhaps, to pull the plug and bring it down to get somebody else in after Trump? I don't know. They got the power either way, I think.
Well, somebody spends his whole day insulting you. The fact that you might not want to have him back in. I mean, it's not, somebody goes, "Oh God, well, Powell doesn't like Trump. How could he possibly like him?" The guy calls him an idiot on national TV like 4 days a week. That doesn't exactly. Make friends and influence people. You obviously didn't read that book. I mean, that isn't the way you get the best out of people. I mean,
this is the art of the deal. You know, like.
But you find some young lady and you sit there and go, maybe you want a date. The first thing you say is, "God, are you ugly? And where'd you get that dress?" I mean who did your hair and who did your nose? By the way, what are you doing Saturday night?
Can we talk?
Yeah, can we? Thank you, John. We'll have you on again next Monday, buddy. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
S&P futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 19. Be right back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's AV. Angelica Lysenko on the board. Mr. David Anlin will be here with in a second. SP Futures down 7. NASDAQ Futures down 21. So we're heading south a little bit, although the S&P's around 12 when we came in. So we're down only as much as 5, and then we're back up to back down 7. Dow Futures down 44. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 34.1%. Shanghai down 26.9%. Hang Seng down 29.1%. Over in Europe, we've got not much going on. The DAX up 39.3%, FTSE up 22.3%, CAC around only up 12, which is 0.2. Bonds, we've got 10-year 1.54, the Bund minus 0.58, Japan minus 0.22, so not much going on there. Oil up 56 cents, which is a full 1%, 53.37, still down from the 58 where it got up to after the attack in Saudi. Brent up 46, 58.95. Natural gas 232, down another 2 cents. RBOB 157. Gold down today. Gold down 770, still 15.05. Silver minus 7 cents. It's 17.55. AV, what do you got for us, Travy Weather Sports?
Good morning. It is 35 minutes past the hour, 52 degrees currently in Chicago. Sunny day with clear skies mostly. Highest 68 and the lowest 50. Even sunnier with clear skies day in Phoenix, 64 degrees right now, with the highest 99 and lowest 71. In traffic, as predicted, we got new accident reported. Overturned vehicle, car rolled over into Columbus Park on Jackson and Austin Avenue. And traffic volume is rising as the sun in Chicago. Expect some delays, especially on 90 Expressway, both ways, from Cumberland to Kedzie, as well as 290 and 55 northbound, 94 westbound. And in sports, final scores: Cardinals beat Bengals 26-23. Bears lost to Raiders 21-24. And that's what I've got for today.
So, were you glued to the Bear game?
I'm sorry.
Were you watching the Bear game front to back?
No,
I didn't think so.
I've never watched the game actually.
Do we have David?
Yes, we do.
David, are you with us?
1 second.
We'll have to click him in.
Okay.
David, you there?
I'm here.
Did you watch the Bears front to back?
I did not.
Wow, they were in London and everything. I thought maybe you'd be all over it.
No, I had some family issues and birthdays and getting ready for my son's wedding next weekend.
Good for you.
And just no time. So I heard a few plays on the radio. It didn't sound too good. And yeah. I said, "Don't need to stray from family."
No, it wasn't that much. What do you make of it's kind of a slipping slope of morality here a little bit. Somebody was telling me Friday, and I forget where the hell it was, that they want to put one of these sports books in one of the new arenas, like while the game's going on. I don't see somebody who always liked to gamble, David. and I don't, you know, I don't mind dropping a, you know, $20 on the Cubs if I'm in Vegas or someplace. But you know, I guess all
the
I have to do
the way they perform this year.
Well, that's, you know, that's another issue. But but I'm listening to the Irish on the radio, or maybe it was on TV. I don't know. I was somewhere. Well, I must have been on radio.
I heard a good part of that game.
Well, I'm, you know, obviously the spread is 46, right? Now, why there's even betting on a game like that, I have no idea. But of course there is. Now, so they're winning
and
what?
And they covered too, right?
Well, they're winning like 42 to zip. And
I thought they scored 50.
Well, they what? But then the guy says something. Well, you know, they need to score again because we all know why some people want them to score again. So let me get this straight. Now we're gonna run up the score so you cover. Right, and you know what was unusual about that game, which I found out last night, which of course I wouldn't know. It's one of the rare times that there was a spread that big, where the team covered the spread and it didn't cover the over under.
Huh?
Because evidently they expected the other team to score somewhat,
right?
And it was 52 to zip, and I think the over under was like 56 or something. So. Anyway, now
live lines. I don't bet football. I don't really bet anything. Maybe you know I used to bet horses here or there, but I'm not a bettor. So, but my son, and he's not a big bettor either, and he has some kind of online thing where he can bet as little as $3. So he'll bet $5, he'll bet $10, nothing serious. But he likes the live lines. So evidently. You know, at half or quarter or whatever, they calculate percentages of some team winning. If you take the underdog, you get this or a money line that. I don't really know much about it. But he likes the live lines, and he likes to fade the favorites a lot. And so evidently, as sports betting comes to this state and many others, that's going to be a hot setup. So, well, I don't know. It seems weird to me to have, you know, betting at a live competition, too tempting and too, you know, whatever. Oh, geez, he dropped the pass and the line didn't cover, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's a money income, and wherever there's money alive, the powers that be are probably going to want to dip into it.
How are you going to keep the fact that the Irish needed to get 46 away from Kelly, away from the players? And if he doesn't, if he puts in the third string too quick and he ends up with 42, that, you know, somebody's going to come after him and say, what's the matter with you?
Right.
How do you stop all that?
I get it. And that's why it's, I'll stop short of saying it's distasteful, but I don't relish the concept.
Well, I'm not going to ask you the question because I don't think you know the answer, and I don't know that my answer is correct, to be honest with you. But the first time I ever heard, This is back when you were supposed to ignore this stuff, when Paul Harning and Alex Karras, where they just were seen with a gambler, and weren't they banned from a year from football? I don't even know if they bet. They might have. I mean, Lou would probably know the history of that more than me. But I think if you were consorting with a gambler, you were out for a while.
Right.
And, so Bear Bryant, I think after he probably already had the prostate cancer, all of a sudden at the end of the game, Alabama's beating somebody, whatever. 24-10, and there's like one play left, and he kicked the field goal, which of course he didn't need to win, right?
Right.
And so the guy says to him, "Coach Bear, why'd you kick that field goal?" "What do you mean? I know that Alabama was a 16-point favorite. A lot of Alabama graduates, bet on Alabama. So why wouldn't I give them a win?"
Oh God!
And this is like, you know, this is 30 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm sure he was probably the only guy who had, I'll say, the stones and the longevity to say that without being banned from the game at the time.
Right.
And here we are 30 years later, and we absolutely expect the
Well, I remember with the Paul Hornung thing. I mean, he was Notre Dame, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he was, with his golden locks and whatever, he was the golden boy. And, I mean, I can't recall exactly what happened, whether they caught him actually betting or just associating with bettors, but it was like a nightmare. Oh, my God, they took down the golden boy.
Well, Alex Karras went down with him, I think, at the time. I think it was two of them. Might have been more. But I'm going to say, David, that arguably Paul Hornung, to this day, was the best athlete that ever played at Notre Dame. In high school, he was a star in baseball, basketball, but his academics weren't exactly the best. So they said, look, senior year, you can't play the other sports, just concentrate on football. When he was at Notre Dame, and he was, you know, trying to get him to study there, well, good luck with that. But evidently, at the college all-star game, remember that, where the championship pro team would play the college all-stars? Evidently, one of the cornerbacks...
Oh, I do remember that.
One of the cornerbacks on the other team, who was supposed to be the fastest man in football, he and Hornung ran like a 100-yard dash, and Hornung beat him by 7 yards.
Wow.
I mean, he was that good at just about everything. The guy was... I mean, talk about a sandbagger. Back when, you know, I was taller and he was younger, I ran to him and Pat Hayden in an elevator. One of these Rockney dinners. We were giving Pat Hayden a broadcasting award, and Paul Hornung was getting some award. And I walk in, and I was, you know, 6'3 and a half. Horning's taller than me. He was listed at 6'2, like 185 or something. I'll bet the guy was 6'5. 235 if he was an ounce, maybe 240. He's a huge man.
He was shifty, he was fast, and he could run with power too. I mean, it helped that he had Jim Taylor with him, but he was powerful of his own.
Yeah, and Pat Hayden, he was supposed to be, what, 6'1"? I bet he was 5'10". So wow. The two of them next to each other looked like Mutt and Jeff. and the stats had him at like an inch apart or 2 inches apart. I mean, Pat Hayden was, you know, a pretty in shape looking guy, but he was, you know, you could see why he had problems in the pros. I mean, he was, you know, he wasn't big enough. But they were pleasant. They were nice guys. I mean, it wasn't like it was an issue, where we got to constantly go to the next level. Now, if everybody starts betting on sports, we're not going to be playing blackjack. We're not going to be going to horses. I mean, do we really think that there's, that out of the population, I will say that you get money. Unfortunately, David, in my experience, you get money out of people you never would have at these bar and restaurant places. And I'm not so sure that's a positive thing. There's a golf course in Blue Island. They put like four or five of those things. It's right across from this like housing complex.
Uh-huh.
Well, the little 19th year old bar now stays open all year. And they make $10,000 a month from the machines.
Wow.
From the people walking across the street. You know, the bar stays open. They still have beers, maybe hot dogs.
So when that happens, I mean, it's, you know, rather than letting a little bar at a 19th hole, you know, golf course stay open and take the money, they're going to have it at Soldier Field, the kiosk.
Right. Right. This isn't sports
betting.
Again,
not my preference, but that's just the way things are.
Well, I mean, one of the guys who works here, weren't we belongs to one of these private clubs? The South Side, you know, they have a bunch of, I mean, they have them in there's the Italian clubs on Oakley Street. I mean, these guys got a little club west on the east side. They moved over there, and there's probably 200-300 members. You go up there, and you got a key to the place, one of those kind of places. It's like the Lakeview Men's Club or something.
Right.
And they put 2-3 machines in there, and I think, I don't know, $1,000 a month in that place. You know, is their cut, or 500. I mean, it's, you know, it keeps the doors open. It pays the lease.
No, I get it.
I don't. All right, David, I've got to ask you, last Friday when we had the numbers come out and the labor numbers, which were not very good, despite everybody saying they were. You know, they're okay. The unemployment number, which is an absolute joke, but that's another story. I will get those numbers up here while I'm asking you this question.
Well, it's 3.5% and, what, 145 or 146 on the non-farm?
Right.
Then there's a private payroll, and then there's 2 months of, adjustments and blah, 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 blah.
Well, my guess is the people are on the DaTube, they are absolutely convinced now that we can, and I just asked John Flanagan this question, that we can have a bifurcated world. We can have a Fed-dominated market where the market stays steady or goes up, and at the same time, we can actually have an economy that slows because the Fed will keep the markets up, and the economy is not going to slow that much, and we'll be okay with it. I'm not going to lead into that. What do you think of that? It's been that way for a while. Is it going to be that way forever? I think we've been in some areas we're in recession right now, but that's another story.
Industrial manufacturing, yeah. For sure.
But this is my thing with this labor or the unemployment number, David. We took essentially 250,000 people. They're no longer looking for a job, but 100,000 people went into the final column. We've had 101 million people, 101.5 million people in the not working column out of the, because what I'm saying here is we have out of 259 people live in this country. Okay, we've got 158 million that are employed. Okay, and we've got 95.6 that aren't. Actually, no, we had the unemployed in there. The 99 that aren't are actually.
Are you subtracting children?
Well, no. What I'm saying here, that's the rub. Well, you have the population is 259. Everybody, this is over 16. So these are people that are available.
Oh, over 16. The total is what, 320, 330?
Well, I'll go across the top. Civilian non-institutional population.
Okay.
Is the first number. It's 259 million. The civilian labor force, okay, is 164. All right. Of the 164, 158 are now employed, 158.2, and 5.7 are unemployed. Now, that unemployed means unemployed and actively looking for a job. Now, you got 95.6 that are nowheresville. They're either in school, they're on disability, they've stopped looking, they're not being counted, they're picking up, you know, dimes and old phones or whatever they're doing. But the idea being is out of the 259 people, 158 are working, 5.7 are unemployed looking for work, and 95.6 are unemployed doing something else. So, but it's the addition of those two numbers, which is really 101 million people, that really hasn't changed in a real long time. We just keep pushing people from the actively working column into the other column. So, the unemployed number is such a small piece of it. In other words, if you have 200,000 people that are actively looking for work, they pile off the end of the 6 month unemployment check. They're now considered not looking. Now they either are home not getting a check, or they go on a long-term disability, or they start stealing, or God knows what they're doing. To you and me, they're not still employed, okay? But now because of the definition, they keep moving them from spot to spot. But the number is, there's 101 million people that aren't doing anything. And that number has not changed really in quite a while. It's just they just move some from the actively looking to the other column.
Yeah, I have real problems with the data, and I've thought for years with the Amazon and especially eBay and whatever, you know what I mean? Shopify is now a big force, you know, where folks can sit home and sell this and sell that, and it can be a service, it can be an article. I've been a big believer in underground economy, and I think it's more pervasive than ever because you got Etsy, you got Shopify, you got Amazon, you got eBay. I mean, these are companies are worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. Well, they don't sell anything of their own. I mean, Amazon, you know, maybe a few books and CDs, but, you know, they're a group of entrepreneurs that sell on their platform. Shopify, same. Etsy, same. eBay, same. And these numbers cannot be counted.
I don't disagree with you. They can't be counted. I know some people that have sold some stuff on Etsy. I know, obviously, I know people have sold stuff on eBay. I don't know one of the people that does it, though, David, where it considers to be a full-time job. It's people
buying some.
I'm not saying that, but I'm saying.
I mean, Amazon holds seminars, I can't tell you every day, but several times a week in all different cities, you know, signing up people to sell whatever. It can be pre-owned articles from their home. It can be accounting services. It can be this. It can be that. And it's full-time jobs.
Okay.
I mean, I should say full-time businesses.
All right. So at the end of the year, are we accusing them all of being tax evaders, or do they say they do accounting online?
I don't know the answer to that, but I would guess that it's more towards the former.
Well, I mean, I know since
would those numbers be interesting to see what we really have?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you know whether it's, you know, bigger or smaller. The same people used to do eBay 15 years ago. But, you know, I don't know.
I mean, it's much bigger.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that when I was involved
if
in...
If not, you couldn't have Etsy and Shopify commanding the capitalizations that we see on the board.
All right. I guess what I'm saying, David, is when my nephew and niece didn't have anything to do, like, 10 years ago, we did some of these storage wars before the thing came on TV. What an interesting... Because I love doing this kind of stuff just to see what a whole different slice of the economy is all about. I mean, you know, I have a insatiable curiosity of how the economy works. And there's people in there. There were people doing that business, you know, 15 years ago, from storage place to storage place. If people don't pay their storage, you get notified and it goes up for auction. And there are rules. You open the door, everybody gets a chance to look in, nobody gets to walk in. You get one look in and you start bidding. So obviously if it's just a wall of boxes, you have no idea if there's a, you know, an old Model T in there or if it's just empty behind the boxes.
Right.
You get pretty good at judging some stuff. I mean, even I did a little bit. But the idea is there were, you know, 15, 20 people that would go to every one of these auctions. And they would use, I mean, you needed, at the time, David, to be good, you needed a bunch of people because you had to clear the thing out in 24 hours. So if you bought four or five of these at one place and they're the size of a one-car garage, I mean, you better have some horses.
Right.
You couldn't dump any stuff at the place. Actually, you could probably get a dumpster for one day. But you needed it out of there because the last thing they wanted was the guy coming looking for his storage stuff like 3 days later and you got it half empty. I mean, so you needed somebody who was really good at eBay, Etsy, whatever you're talking about. So you needed essentially a warehouse to do your staging. You needed to identify the stuff you didn't want right away instantly. You needed a place to dump that that's legal because you couldn't do it every week and just find a spot. And you needed probably a big booth at a Stop and Swap flea market or something, or what do they call them? So, I mean, you needed an organization to do it. And I don't know that that's grown from, I'll bet it was 10,000 people countrywide, maybe 5,000 people 15 years ago. I don't think it's 50 now. I mean, it's probably sort of the same group doing the same stuff.
I think it's millions.
Millions of people buying storage units?
Yeah, just anecdotally, they've had all these newscasts about Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they want, you know, people to move to Tulsa, Oklahoma Chamber of Commerce. So they're awarding $10,000 to anyone who literally moves to Tulsa, have to have a Tulsa address, and bring your laptop, or they'll sell you one for $100 or, you know, subsidize that. Get in a room with others and sell your wares, whether it's services or you have a warehouse somewhere with goods or whatever, and they show these rooms with literally hundreds of people who have taken their $10,000 check and their subsidized laptop, and that's their business.
But you're making a leap of faith that they don't have an organization, and they never show that they're working, that they never
and
never
that's what
taxes.
I'm talking about. And what does it do to the data?
Well, but okay, and I'll lobby another one. 15, 20 years ago, I know people in the construction business, if the economy got warm and you had, you know, 30 carpenters and electricians and everybody working for you that came out of the blue, came out of the woodwork, if you could pay everybody cash, they loved it.
Right.
So you never counted those people.
Right.
Okay, so now these guys will tell you nobody wants that anymore.
And what I'm, just as a segue, I'm not trying to say, oh, geez, everything's so much more robust than, you know, GDP's 3.5. I'm not making a case for that. What I'm making a case for is the data is seriously flawed.
Well, and I'm saying it always was. It was flawed for the people that paid cash. I'm saying, okay, we're losing the people that are using Etsy. I'll agree with you on that. But we've picked up the carpenters that used to get paid cash now refuse to get paid cash because they can't get a credit card. They can't get those guys don't want to get paid cash anymore.
Right, I get it.
So, and I mean, as to which one, you know, what I'm saying is this number is right at, in 2013, right, we had 11 million people unemployed and we had 90 million people in the other column. That's 101 million people.
So it's still 101. It's
still 101.
They're different.
Yeah, just the columns are different. And, you know, I'm just saying I don't
get it.
So, hey, are we going up or are we going down? Last week we finished pretty close to unchanged after all that crazy stuff.
I think it's still, until we resolve some of this trade stuff, get a little clearer view of the Fed and Brexit and all this stuff that's pending this month, I think it's a trading range close to 2850, where it held this last, you know, big break, 2850 to 60. S&P is a buy, and 2990, you know, whatever, 2% up to 3009 is an absolute sale.
Just be sure that you don't say anything positive about the protesters in Hong Kong, or PTI will lose all their Chinese business. That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, David, thank you very much. Okay. S&P futures now down 8.25. NASDAQ futures down 26.25.
What do we
learn? Thank you,
AV.
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.